we have a very special guest, J.P. Sears. He's an international teacher, speaker, and performer at events around the world. He's an emotional healing coach, a curious student of life, and a satirist best known for his popular YouTube channel. J.P.'s ultra-spiritual videos have accumulated over 100 million views, and he has a brand new book out, How to Be Ultra-Spiritual, 12 and a half steps to spiritual superiority, which is endorsed by the Holy Mother of God, Buddha, and Tony Robbins. Welcome to the show, JP.
Thank you, Marie, for having me. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
I'm so excited to be speaking with you. And I have to admit, I was kind of thinking about what are all the best questions to ask JP? And I wanted to compile this list of just perfect things to ask, and I was getting too stressed out about it. So I figured, let's just have a conversation.
Yeah, we can pretend we're human beings, like just talking to each other. And I think it's funny. Do you know who Kyle Cease is by chance?
I do. I love him.
Oh, I absolutely love him too. He's amazing. I think it was in February. He and I sat down to have dinner with each other. And he's so amazing. One of the things he really is a shining example of is honoring spontaneity. And he runs his 2-day events where, he invited me to be at one of them, was amazing. So there's 1,400 people, and it's all day for two days. And he has no idea what he's going to say until he goes on stage. And, like, that's not an exaggeration. He literally doesn't plan anything. So he shows up and really honors the moment. And that's, it takes a big set of being willing to surrender balls to do that. So with that little background on Kyle, when we sat down for dinner, he's talking about his events and how he does things. And he says, we sat down for dinner here without a script. We didn't premeditate anything. And it's all not only working out, but it's enjoyable. And I think it was like a great lesson, not only pulling to the professional setting, but I think it also applies here. Like, yeah, we can figure out what the script should say after we say it.
Cool. Well, I always, there's always this feeling when you mention like professional, this idea of being a professional. And I think preparation goes along with that. And we do have this tendency, at least myself, I know that if I'm too prepared, then I'm locked in and I'm not able to be in the moment.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to be underprepared because then I just look like I don't know what I'm doing. And nobody wants that.
Of course. Yeah. I think there's like this magical place of balance that's kind of invisible. So it's hard for us to find it. And I think it's different for each person, where to me, preparing enough means, okay, now like I've been prepped so I can be present in the moment. Like whatever kind of foundation I needed under me in order to stand on that so I can best stand sturdy in the moment, I've got that. But of course, like you say, over preparing, it's like, okay, now I'm actually not prepared to stand in the moment because I'm pushed into the future and I'm just overly premeditated. And how does a person get that balance? I think probably by screwing it up at least 1,000 times.
Mm. Well, and Kyle Cease's first event was called I Hope I Screw This Up.
Which, how's that for just an amazing, and his new book is called I Hope I Screw This Up. Man, talk about taking the pressure off.
He started recently, his mother just passed away. I'm sure you're aware of this. He started another 100 days of videos, and I started 100 days of videos yesterday because I was so inspired by what he's doing.
Oh, how awesome.
Yeah. So it's exciting.
And I'm curious, Marie, what's your angle on the 100 days of videos? Is it just whatever you're inspired to talk about in the moment on the given day, and that's what you're doing a video on, or is there a different angle?
Yeah, I've done video challenges in the past about meditation and gratitude, vulnerability, all those sorts of things. But this time, I'm just doing whatever I want to say. And
nice.
because, and that's why I was so inspired, because Kyle is kind of doing the same thing where he is, it's not a set agenda. It's just, let's see what comes out. And I don't know if you've been watching them.
Well, oddly enough, yesterday and today I watched.
Cool.
Wow, this is like the, I feel like this is the Kyle Cease fan club hour.
I know. We're here to promote your book, How to Be Ultra Spiritual.
Let's not promote me or you. This, we're above being so selfish. This is all about Kyle.
He is doing a lot of great work, and he's actually, he's a comedian, and my boyfriend is a comedian. So there's a little bit of, it's interesting how, seeing how he's moved out of that world of being snarky to the world of being ultra spiritual, I guess.
Yeah. And at the same time, I don't think he's caging himself into only being snarky. Yet he'll pull elements of that into his, what are great spiritual insights. I think especially when he's on stage and it's kind of like the spotlight's on him. And I think it's brilliant. And I think, you know, when I had a chance to meet him and then just form a great friendship, it was like connecting with my long lost brother, because it's like, he and I, our paths are exactly the same in an opposite way. So he came professionally from comedy and is now transitioned into, call it, the spiritual teaching world. And then mine was the opposite. I came from a background of essentially the spiritual teaching world. And now my new thing is using comedy to express the spiritual teachings, which it's, in a way, we've arrived at the same place, both doing it our own ways, but our, like, his new ground is my old ground and my new ground is his old ground. So it's like we're seeing a mirror image of each other in a way, except my hair's longer.
Well, yeah, I love that. And when you came to Vancouver to promote your book, which is How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half Steps to Spiritual Superiority, you talked about Kyle, and I was actually I was surprised that so few people in the audience were aware of him. So few of your fans.
Oh, those horrible Canadians. We got to blame them. Lack of awareness about Kyle Cease. I think that's the fifth leading cause of death. Lack of awareness about Kyle Cease.
It could be. But the Vancouver Public Library has ordered like 6 copies of his books. So somebody must be aware of him here.
That is good. And I'll have you know, Marie, I wrote a book endorsement. It took me months. And then when I finished my book endorsement, I called up Kyle and asked if he'd be willing to write a book for my book endorsement. And he said, yeah, not a problem. I'll have it to you tomorrow. And thus, we're selling my book endorsement disguised as Kyle's book. But the main thing, my book endorsement, is on the back cover of his book. And I think as I'm observing what I'm saying, my inner narcissist needs to make everything about me. And I think I just did. So well done, inner narcissist.
That brings up a few questions, JP. When you are coming up with these funny, ironic things that you say, how much of that have you thought of before or maybe pre-written, and how much of it is just naturally coming through you?
It's a good question. A lot of the things I do in the comedy videos are things I've thought about a lot. And, you know, I script my comedy videos. I find the writing process to be a very important part of this style of creativity with this expression of comedy via video. And there will be times like my girlfriend and I will be driving in the car, and I'm just sort of half angry, half playful about a given topic. A couple of them recently, we were in, I think they both came up on the same trip to Target of all places. I was just rambling on in a condescending, playful, funny/angry way about college education. So my girlfriend Amber said, you should make a video about that. That's really good. I'm like, oh yeah, I agree. I'll do that. So I probably about a month ago at this point, I put out a video called Higher Education, my satirical take on college education's present day. And then also on the same trip, I was just, I think we passed a gun shop. So I started riffing about guns. And about two nights ago at this point, I released a video called Gun Control. So, you know, some of it is as recent as like I just had a rambling conversation with my girlfriend, and other aspects of the videos are things I've been thinking about for years. And then there's also like a beautiful new part where when I'm sitting down to write a script, you know, I'll have inspiration or ideas already there. But when I have the framework of a script, now there's a place for new ideas, new perspectives to land, which is really cool because it's like the old ideas that I might have had, they're like bringing new seedlings with them because I feel like I should make this into a tree analogy.
Hmm. Apparently. Actually, speaking of trees, there is I think it's called The Hidden Life of Trees, a book about how trees in the forest communicate with each other in all these crazy ways.
Is that by the authors Tompkins and Bird?
I'm not sure. I can Google it if we need to know, but it's cool. I believe it's called The Hidden Life of Trees.
I think I've read that book.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And it was it brought up a lot of thoughts for me about how human society has kind of been faced with all these problems because we've cut ourselves off from the, what's the word where we're all interconnected the way that the trees are in the forest?
Oh yeah, like a, you know, collective consciousness, a web of consciousness, oneness, yeah. Unity.
Yeah, and even just the biological, you know, the biosphere of how, you know, one thing dies and then that fertilizes the soil and just everything on this planet is interconnected in one way or another. And we spend so much time trying to disconnect ourselves where like a tree in the forest, they'll actually support another tree that's dying. Whereas humans are kind of like, oh, I don't want that person. I don't want to see that person. But the healthier everyone is in a society or the healthier all the trees are in a forest, the better off the entire population is.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. I think, honestly, nature is the greatest teacher. And I think nature's lessons are so wise that oftentimes the dim-witted students called us sometimes, we don't see these brilliant lessons in front of us until someone with acute vision points it out. And I think this is a great lesson where what I heard you essentially say is the trees are teaching us about our true nature, that we can see their literal biosphere connections because it's sort of like a literal physical vibrational energy. And our root systems as people, because we don't see them, we pretend they're not there. I think the sense of separation is one of the greatest tricks we play on ourselves, and it's a very persistent illusion, as I feel like someone once upon a time might have said something like that I should quote, but I forget who said it, so apparently they're so insignificant that they're not quotable. And I think there, when we realize our true nature of like, yes, we are all connected, so let's freaking not only treat each other like it, but let's treat ourselves like it. Because I think it's easier to be nice to other people, but I think the real work is also found in treating ourselves like a god or a goddess that we really are. Because when we treat ourselves like crap, we realize, wow, all the other human trees that I'm connected to are getting treated like crap. Whether it's self-criticism, you know, the punishing ourselves or physical abuse through food or whatever it might be, self-neglect, that is all self-abuse that I think becomes someone else's abuse when we realize the true nature of our connection beyond what our eyes can comprehend. And I think also there's this feeling of peace that comes up inside of me when I'm reminded of the true nature of the interconnectedness of all of life, not just humans to humans or trees to trees, but us to every other damn thing. It's just like, wow, I feel really supported right now, which makes me feel peaceful. I feel like I'm in this giant, amazing womb that is not separate from me. So yeah, anyway, thank you for the reminder. We're all trees connected.
Thank you, JP. Well, go ahead.
I feel like we just took the tree analogy to the next level. Or was it a tree metaphor? I don't know the difference between an analogy and a metaphor.
I don't know. I will have to look it up.
Kyle Cease would know. Why are you talking to me when you could be talking to him?
Oh, I don't know. Well, you were in Vancouver promoting your book, and I don't know about Kyle. How I don't know if he has time. I'm sure you have an extremely busy schedule, but I kind of normally when I go to see speakers, I'm not the kind of person who hangs back and waits for the autograph. I'm too ultra spiritual to do that. You know, like. Why would I need your autograph? You're just a human too, right?
You're about that.
Normally, yes. But I wanted to have the chance to ask you to be on the show, and I'm so glad that I did, because I know that you probably get dozens of requests every day.
So. Yeah, well, I'm very grateful that you hung around to put in the in-person invitation as well. I know the line was a bit long. And yeah, thank you for the sacrifice of humbling yourself enough to wait around.
Well, it just shows what a good person I am that I was willing to do that.
It does. And I think you saying that it shows what a good person you are shows even more what a good person you are.
Yeah. Well, that brings me, actually, let's just, for people listening on the radio, we are speaking right now to JP Sears. You may know him from his YouTube channel and the ultra spiritual videos that he does. You can find his website at awakenwithjp.com. And he is currently promoting his book, How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a Half Steps to Spiritual Superiority. And that's what I really want to talk about today, right now, because feeling superior to other people is just so important, right?
It obviously is. It's how we, the way to truly connect with other people is to disconnect from them, because we realize that we're not equals and we are in fact superior.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
it's a paradox.
In order to do the important work in the world, we have to raise ourselves above everyone else, right? Because they need us. To be
yes.
better than them.
And thank God they have us, or else they'd be hopeless without us, the ones who have our stuff sewed together.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, that brings me to your ultra, ultra spiritual videos, because I know obviously we're being facetious here, but the videos
we're not, Marie.
No. We're speaking our truth.
Yes.
With a thin veil of sarcasm to hide that we really believe it, right?
You had me at facetious. That's my favorite kind of fish.
Okay, but in all seriousness, though, I mean, your videos are very entertaining, and you're welcome. And so if anyone is not familiar with your videos, you portray someone who is ultra spiritual, ultra, you know, crystals and chanting, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but you kind of show the extreme side of that. And on the one hand, I've watched some of your videos and I've kind of felt that recognition of like, oh yeah, I've done that before. Or I've had that attitude before, and it's not like I'm proud of it. But there's also I find myself sometimes watching and seeing this extreme version of, and there are people like that out in the world and in my social circle. And I notice that feeling of, I do feel better than them because I'm not like that, or I'd like to think that I'm not like that. So there's kind of this balance between recognizing that we all have our issues, but yet I still do a lot of the time notice myself feeling or trying to feel better than other people. Why do you think that is?
Well, I would probably say it's because you're a needy human being and you have an ego. And I would dare say that's, if that's true for you, that's the same reason why I do that. I think one of our ego's needs in this life is to feel significant. And it significant by definition means you can't feel it as an equal if you're feeling significant. So I think our ego always strives to be bigger than what it is. And I think what it is nothing. I think it's actually just an illusion. I think our ego is the sense of separation that we have. And therefore, we can have a sense of self. And therefore, we fear this thing called death because we believe we're separate from the rest of life. Therefore, we think at some point we could disintegrate. So our sense of separation and our fears start persisting. So I think there's a functional part to the hunger for significance. There's certainly a dysfunctional part. I think the functional part, and especially in the early phase of life, I think the earlier in life it is, the stronger it naturally and functionally is, where our need for significance is what drives us to develop a sense of self. And that's awesome. Like in our sense of self, I think is not ourself, but it's our sense of self. I think we were born into this life and we forget a lot and don't know who the hell we are. So we need to have a sense of self. And man, I also think that having a sense of self enriches life. So becoming significant in some way, I think, is what allows the mountain to rise above the terrain. Even though it's still the earth, the mountain has a sense of self, a sense of being different than the terrain around it. And its significance above the other terrain lets it have that sense of self. So I think it's the same thing with humans. And then I think around the time of midlife, whether it's like literally at midlife or just more the metaphoric, like whenever the midlife crisis hits you, whether you're 20 or 80, or you're just in denial your whole life, so it hits you many times, but you never feel it. So at midlife, I think where the need for significance, it lessens. And why does it lessen? I would guess that's because now we're at a point where we're not trying to build up our sense of self and define who we are. We're actually trying to let go of our sense of self so that we can fall deeper into a place of surrender to discover who we really are. But I don't think we can get to that place of discovering who we really are until we build a sense of self, which over a few decades teaches us who we're not. And then once we've experienced who we're not, then we're set up for the next phase of life, which is to discover who we really are. And I think at that point, humbleness is what drives us into the verticality of what we are and who we are, rather than the driver of significance. And at this point, I don't even know if I'm answering the question, Marie, but apparently I'm saying something that I need to hear, or else I wouldn't be saying it. So thank you, JP and Marie.
Thank you, JP. Well, and of course, you know, the more humble you appear, the better other people will think you are.
Because, it makes you more significant, but you're somehow not significant because you're just more humble.
Yes. It's a paradigm.
It is. And it's a paradoxical paradigm in some ways.
I do think
I feel like we should have dramatic music playing right now.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, Well, Marie, you are obviously the most humble person I've ever met, aside from myself.
Thank you. I do try to be humble, but really only because I know that it will make people see my humility and therefore feel like they're not as good as me.
Yeah, so, which is good. It's that's somehow good for them.
It is, yeah. Well, it gives them something to strive for.
Of course, yeah. Well, and I hope they don't screw it up.
Again, we are speaking with J.P. Sears. He's the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half Steps to Spiritual Superiority. AwakenWithJP.com is his website. And J.P., I'm curious to know, you do some emotional healing coaching.
Yes.
Can you talk about, because I mean, I think we all, aside from myself being so together, you know, as all listeners of this show know, my life is just completely perfect. but for the rest of the lowly people in the world, how can they most benefit from your emotional coaching?
Yeah, well, they kind of can't anymore. As of January, I've kind of closed the door where I can't accept any new clients, and I've, you know, the existing clients, once all the scheduled appointments were complete, I'm not scheduling anymore. So in other words, I gave up my one-on-one client coaching practice because I was just being called to let it go so that I can embrace and energize many of the other great purposeful opportunities that I'm being called to embrace and energize. So I think, in other words, that means people can feel at loss for the fact that they didn't work with me when I was available. But with that said, I've got some projects that are, they'll be coming down the pipeline. They'll be both recorded projects that I'll be doing with my publisher, Sounds True, as well as some live events where the products won't be just comedically oriented. They'll be also very much honoring the sincere coaching that is very near and dear to my heart and soul. It just won't be in a one-on-one setting. So I would certainly invite people to keep their eye out for that kind of stuff that'll be coming down the pipeline.
Cool. So it'll be more like videos and webinars and group sort of things?
Yeah, yes. And then, yeah, absolutely. And then live events as well.
Cool. Ooh, I hope you can come to Vancouver when you do a live event.
I would love to. I love Vancouver. I sincerely do. The last time I was there, which was when, I met you, I was really depressed. It was like days of straight rain, and that really got to me.
Because you were in Vancouver with the rain?
Well, yeah, I think if I was anywhere with that much rain for that long, I would potentially be depressed. And I know that's not optimistic thinking, but like, yeah, by the time I left, I was like, ooh, this feels tough on me. Mm-hmm. I applaud Vancouverites for being able to somehow survive the winter.
Well, it just shows how much better we are than the rest of the world, right?
Kind of.
Our ability to survive the rain.
That or like the gods look so unfavorably upon you that they say no sunshine for you guys.
That's possible too.
And I think that's what happens. God is someone in the sky who is definitely a person that gravity doesn't affect, and he or she, but it's definitely a he, makes these decisions to punish people because I think he's got severe personality disorders, at least this God that I'm talking about. I'm certainly not talking about the other gods that people would take offense about.
No.
And now they can be offended that I'm not talking about their God.
There's always a reason to be offended.
I thank you. That's spoken like a true optimist. I agree.
So, JP, I'm curious about your own spiritual practice. I mean, and in your book, How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a Half Steps to Spiritual Superiority, you actually talk about the importance of quantifying how often you meditate so that other people can compare themselves to you and determine whether they are better or worse than you. So how much do you actually meditate?
Well, I was meditating for, I had my timer set for 3 minutes, but you called me like a minute and a half early, Marie.
No.
So today I meditated for 1.5 minutes. And I will say that ideally, today hasn't been ideal, and I honestly feel very under meditated the past few days. There's times, this is one of the times where I slide down the slippery slope of not prioritizing some of the priorities. But on a normal, ideal day, I'm simply meditating for 10 minutes. And that works well for me. And one of the reasons why it works well is it's short enough that I'll actually do it. And it's long enough that I feel different afterwards. And I feel a nice kind of perpetual, kind of peaceful momentum in my day.
I'm so sorry I interrupted your meditation.
It was horrible. I'm going to need at least 20 minutes to be a victim about it.
Yeah.
So it feels like my soul's fractured.
Wow.
I mean, aside from that, and my heart being broken, and now I'm under a severe stress response. And I'm completely dissatisfied with life now. Aside from that, Maria, it's really no big deal.
All right. Well, and the one benefit of all of those reasons to be upset is it gives you something to complain about. Because I know that I'm the least happy when I have nothing to complain about.
Yeah, it's no happiness found in happiness. A lot of happiness found in horrible sadness and depression, for sure.
Absolutely, or at least satisfaction.
Satisfaction makes us happier than actual happiness does.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot. I hope we're recording this so other people can listen, and we should like write a new holy book based on this wisdom.
The art of complaining? Oh, that might have actually already been written.
It's probably that sounds like the art of anything has probably already been written.
Yeah.
In fact, literally, the art of anything is probably a title that's been written, I'm guessing.
Probably. How to be smug and look good doing it.
That's good. That basically sounds like a pickup artist handbook that will have other applications too.
Fantastic. We could have a whole series.
How to be a creepy, smug person. And think other people think that you look good doing it.
So that implies other people don't actually think that we look good doing it.
Well,
Yeah.
I think people are never as dumb as some people think they are.
Well, that's disappointing.
So, I wish they were. It'd be much easier to manipulate these highly intelligent, brilliant creatures.
Yeah, here I thought I'd been getting away with it all these years, but maybe that's why I have so few friends. That might.
It could be. I love like the self-help gurus who are not gurus, but they're marketers who are marketing their years of self-help experience that they don't have. And then they wonder, well, why am I not getting any business? It's like, well, people can see through your facade. I think authenticity always wins out.
Well, that actually brings up a question, JP, because this show's been going on for about 8 or 9 years now. And so
Really, I thought we were only on the line for like 35 minutes. Ah, man, time has flown by so fast.
yeah.
I haven't even gotten too thirsty.
Well, that's fantastic. It must be because of your ultra spirituality.
And the lack of time.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I've been blessed to interview many, many different speakers and gurus, And even some of the very popular ones, I've had a couple of situations where I became actually really upset that I didn't feel like the interaction that I had with them behind the scenes was the same as what they portray publicly. And on the one hand, we're all human, everybody has bad days. So even the most evolved person, I have to accept that they are still human. But I am kind of curious to know your opinion on that, about the some of the most, and we won't name any names, but some of the most famous gurus. I'm sure you've met a lot of them. How do you determine who's legit and who's not, or do you even try?
I don't try it. I don't think, I mean, my opinion of who's legit or not doesn't determine anything. It just determines what my opinion is. And, but like when I meet people, whether they're like super well known or not, I know who I want to connect to. And it's based on a feeling like, does this person feel congruent, transparent, and authentic? And if so, I want more of them, whether that's more connection, more conversation, or I want their book. And if there's an incongruency with how they appear versus how they are behind the scenes, the more different that is, the less I want anything to do with them. I mean, it doesn't make them a bad person. It just means like I probably don't like their incongruent behavior. So I think a lack of transparency, if people have a facade of like, oh, life is good and I'm a nice person, and then they're treating like people like crap behind the scenes, obviously the not so balanced person who's treating people like crap behind the scenes, that's concealed to a degree, and that's the opposite of transparency, and it sure as heck isn't authentic. And that's a person who they might have a great message, but they might not be embodying their great message. And what matters most to me isn't what someone's brain can remember and recite. Or even what they intuitively download and then can remember and recite. That I really don't care. But what really matters to me is the human heart and what someone embodies and how they can connect to other people at a heart level. So that's what matters most to me. So I guess in a roundabout way, I'm contradicting myself, because now I think what I'm saying is, how I determine what my opinion is, based on my feelings about these things, the congruency or lack thereof.
And I guess sometimes, I mean, we get impressions of people, and I don't know the exact percentage of how it, but I heard that we do something like 5% of, we might know 5% of what a person is or what they project onto the world, and then our brains fill in the other 95%, and we just decide who we think they are based on the 5% that we've seen.
That's funny. And I think that's weird. I think that we do that to ourselves as well. And we like look at maybe 5% self and then 95% just made up imagination of ourselves, probably all happening in the first 2 years of our life. And then we became very fixated on who we are, even though that's like, it's not who we are. It's 95% made up imagination rather than actually getting to know our real self beyond who we think we are. So, yeah, I would guess that's probably a super internal and external reality. And it's definitely a fact that it's my opinion that it's a fact.
Thank you, JP. We are speaking right now with JP Sears. He is the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a Half Steps to Spiritual Superiority. And you can also find him on YouTube with his ultra spiritual videos and his website, awakenwithjp.com. So, JP, you seem to have figured out a way to serve the world that seems to be fulfilling you in a lot of ways. You're successful on the external way that society would judge a person as being successful, but it also seems like you're happy and you're living your purpose. And a lot of us are kind of stuck in this place where we have to earn money because you got to pay the rent and buy food at the grocery store. And we also want to contribute to the world in a way that feels good to us and helps other people. But it can be really difficult to find that balance. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how you found this path for yourself.
Yeah, you know, being the blind man stumbling along, not knowing where I'm going until I realize it, to me, that's so important. I think a lot of us, when we're looking for a sense of purpose or more purpose, we're looking for what we think it will look like. And I would guess it very rarely ever shows up the way we think it will. So we spend a lot of time looking without finding, rather than, I would say, like discovering what our purpose is. And I think it's also my opinion, at least, that, you know, our purpose, how we want to serve the world, and then like the mundane job of 9 to 5, what, they're not mutually exclusive. We can absolutely do both. Just because we're working 9 to 5 doesn't mean we can't have purpose outside of 9 to 5, nor does it mean we can't have purpose during the 9 to 5. So with that said, I think where I found, and I would say I feel very blessed that I do feel a large amount of purpose in my life. I love it. It's a great blessing. So when I look to see how I've kind of stumbled my way into the senses of purpose that I have, it would be whenever I have said yes to something that, like, my heart just says, like, this is a yes, or my gut instinct says, yes, do this, but it scares me. So in other words, taking risks, that's what leads me to purpose and meaning and inner fulfillment, and I would dare say growth and expansion. Long story short, I think getting the hell out of our comfort zone is where purpose is. It's on the other side of it. And I think the feeling of purpose, it's always available to us. Yet oftentimes our awareness gets tunnel visioned and we don't see it and feel it while we're in this intoxicated place called our comfort zone. So I would dare say one of the greatest gifts we could ever do for ourselves is get out of our comfort zone. And we don't need to know what our purpose looks like in order to find it. And even if we know what our purpose looks like, we're probably wrong. So I think being willing to look for what we look for the treasure, even though we don't know what it looks like, one of the ways we are looking for the treasure is we're taking risks. We're stepping out of our comfort zone. And a simple way of saying that is we try new things. You know, it might be, I'm somehow called to start my own business, and that scares me, but like it feels like light in my heart. Well, that would be like, okay, that's meaningful. Take that step of risk. It might be leave this relationship. It might be approach this person about a new relationship. It might be eating different foods. It might be switching our daily routine, something super small. I might be starting to write a blog. I might be starting to make videos. Like, I've never done that before. And what will my friends on Facebook think? So taking risk, getting out of our comfort zone, I think is really the antidote for finding the feelings of purpose that all of our hearts crave, in my delusional opinion.
Thanks, JP. When you're talking about knowing what your heart feels, I think for a lot of us, I know this is a challenge for me, is that my logical mind or my ego or whatever, like that thinking part of my mind that's overthinking will kind of sometimes delude itself into thinking this is intuition or this is guidance.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know how to balance that.
Yeah, I don't either. But if I was pretending like I knew, to me, the feelings of the heart are just that, they are feelings. They are absolutely not thinking, and they're not stories that we attach to feelings. So when I say, like, you know, follow my heart, which I realize, like, those words are super abstract and mostly useless, because, like, what does that mean in practical, useful reality? So when I'm talking about the feelings of the heart, I'm not even talking about emotions. Getting more primal and simple, less IQ'd than that, in its body sensations. And for me, it shows up as a simple, like, wow, I feel lighter inside of my heart space. And that's what I interpret to be like a yes. And when I feel heavier, more constricted body sensation wise around my heart, that's a no. And, you know, my thinking might say this, this, and this, and on a good day, I will ignore that, because the thinking is absolutely not a body sensation. So I think the wisdom of our being speaks to us through a powerful language called feelings. And the primal body sensations, I think, are the wise language that's beyond English, that is, it's very powerful, yet very subtle. I think it's always there. We just have to tune in to it. And a lot of us have no idea what our body sensations are around our heart until we actually are reminded, like, feel it. Like, you'll have feelings there. Like, right now, there are feelings there. Can you just tune your attention into it? And that's part of it. Noticing, having the awareness, and then, which is amazing. That's a great step. And then the second step is, do we have the courage to honor it or not, to abide by the heart when it gets lighter, or to abide by the heart when it gets heavier? And I think when there's a body sensation of the heart, our mind will absolutely want to incredibly quickly wrap a story around that. And I think any story that mind creates might be a super interesting story, but it's also a story of seduction that distracts us from, I think, the pure, just the pure organic feeling of the heart.
That reminds me of how, and might not quite be the same thing, but how, as an example, before a tidal wave comes, animals will find higher ground. There's something that they're sensing, whether it's atmospheric pressure or something that they're picking up on, that if we weren't thinking so much, we might actually notice those sensations in our body too.
Yeah, I love it. Great minds think alike. I've sort of demented ones, but I was going to say, like, I thought of that exact same thing. Whatever the animals are sensing, do we have that exact same sense? Just we don't know it because we're so distracted by worshiping the stories of the mind that we don't notice it. And I think it was probably Einstein who said something along the lines of, the mind makes a wonderful servant and a terrible master. I think what makes a wonderful master is our heart and the feelings our heart generates. And then the mind can become a servant of that. And I think a lot of us are sort of living in the opposite way, where we honor the mind and treat our miraculous heart like it's a servant.
Beautifully said. Well, we have been speaking with J.P. Sears. He is the author of How to Be Ultra Spiritual, 12 and a half Steps to Spiritual Superiority, because who doesn't want to be superior to other people? You can find him at awakenwithjp.com, as well as his ultra spiritual videos on YouTube and Facebook and all over the interwebs. So we just have a few minutes left in the show, J.P. I'm wondering what you want to talk about for the last few minutes.
Well, I love that. Here's what comes up, kind of in the name of taking risk. Let's see, 2 nights ago, I put out a video on gun control, and that was an uncomfortable, risky feeling video for me to put out. And like scary, because I knew, especially in America, I mean, people get very triggered about religion. It's like you can't, when you have different opinions, you can't talk to people logically because there's this emotional charge that comes up. And in America, guns are a religious mindset for a lot of people. So from my delusional perspective, I see, like, with the mass shootings that happen in America, along with gun violence that isn't in mass shooting scenarios, there is a really horrible problem. That's like, it's just like insulting to humankind that this still happens present day. And I think there's just so much not being done about it. And I won't pretend to know what the solution is, but I do know that the solution probably is not doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So nonetheless, I put out a video on gun control where I shine the light on what I would consider some dogmatic, expired, emotionally charged thinking around guns and the mentality that drives someone to be very attached to what a gun symbolizes for them. And, you know, I knew a lot of people would lose their crap about the video because it's like, you know, this is like a religion to some people. And it meant a lot to me that I was willing to take the risk, even though it scared me, even though I knew a lot of people would lose their crap, and indeed they did, yet I was able to honor my voice that wanted to be voiced through me. And that meant a lot to me. And that's it's a reoccurring message that I see in my life. And I think honestly, the lives of other people who have inner fulfillment, I don't care what their external circumstances look like, but people who have genuine inner fulfillment, they seem to also have the pattern of being willing to take a risk in the name of being true to their self. And one, I just wanted to share that because it means a lot to me, and I happen to think it's an important lesson. And I'm also curious, Marie, if I'm allowed to ask, what kind of risk comes to mind that you've taken in your life that's, maybe it was scary, maybe it was painful, but nonetheless, it somehow paid off to you or for you with more meaning in your life.
You want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing, I mean, I'm sure there's quite a few things, but the first thing that comes to mind is my current relationship. I've been in it for 2.5 years, and I have a lot of, he's 8 years younger than me, which is very new to me. And he's also, he's the starving artist type. And I have all of these ideas about what I need financially and what kind of a partner I need. And I want marriage in X amount of time. And in an attempt to push him away, because he was pursuing me, I kept putting out all these reasons why he should stay away. And I said, you know, I'm really needy, I'm high maintenance, and I could tell that he wasn't as available as I was hoping for. He wasn't going to fulfill all the needs that I thought I had. And he said to me, well, maybe I can help you with that. And it was in that moment that I was faced with a decision. Do I take this opportunity to work through all of these things, or do I do what I think is safe by pushing him away? And, you know, we still have, every relationship has challenges. And my life is not, all of my neuroses are not by any means fixed, but the amount of growth that I've had in this relationship by choosing to to be uncomfortable and choosing a path without guarantees has been so valuable. I still have to face those fears all the time because I don't know what's going to happen. But I mean, even if I married someone who had everything on paper that I thought I needed, I mean, he could die, the economy could change. There's never any guarantees.
Yeah. And what you thought you needed, like, wow, you might have been wrong. You absolutely might have been wrong about what you needed. But I love that. That is a wonderful risk of going for a guy who's not the guy that you thought you wanted, that you thought you needed, but willing to take the risk of betting on the connection that you have rather than the way things are supposed to look or who he's supposed to be or who you're supposed to be for him. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you approve because now I feel validated in my choice. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad we could bring codependence into this.
Well, JP, is there anything else that you want to add before we say goodbye today?
Yeah, that I really appreciate the living heck out of you inviting me onto your lovely offering to the world. It means a lot to me, and I find it so delightful to talk with you. So I just want you to know I appreciate you, Marie.
Thank you, JP. Well, I really appreciate you as well. And I do, in meeting you, you do seem like a very congruent person. And genuine is the word I'm looking for, I think. And I really do appreciate that as well, because like you said earlier in the show, when you come across people who feel like they are who they say they are, you want more of that. You want to be connected.
Yeah. Right on. Well, thank you for believing that I'm a little bit of that.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and for sharing this hour with us. It has been such a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak with JP so that you can listen to our conversation. So I hope that you found value in it. And I want to send you lots of love. Be well and have a wonderful week. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Do you want to know more about human rights abuses, global issues, and international politics? Are you interested in writing to foreign and local governments in response to global crises? Are you ready to give peace a chance? If your answer is yes, then Amnesty International UBC may be the club for you. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/AIUBC or send us an email at amnestyubc@gmail.com.
Do you like laughing? Hilarity, radical thought-provoking creativity, and laughing? UBC Improv is UBC's home for improvisational comedy, theater made up on the spot. Like us on Facebook to learn when our next shows are. Search for us on YouTube for our film sketches. And follow us on Twitter because we want the followers. UBC Improv. Insert cheesy slogan here. Let's get it on.
Graduate student? De-stress from your studies through the Graduate Student Society. Come and meet new friends through our beer tasting sessions, sports leagues, and fitness classes. And maybe you're interested in making a difference. Help eliminate sexual assault by volunteering to become a GSS Active Bystander Trainer. If ever you experience difficulties with your supervisors, faculty, or the university, the GSS can provide confidential advocacy assistance. And we will work with you to help resolve academic, personal, or financial issues. Your graduate student experience matters. Let the GSS help you now. Visit gss.ubc.ca.
Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe walking around campus at night? There's an AMS service dedicated to helping anyone trying to get across campus alone at night. We're SafeWalk, and we have your back. Call us at 604-822-5355 to request a transfer, or check out our website at ams.ubc.